You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this episode, we're talking about the different circumstances impacting the restaurant industry, how COVID-19 changed that, and how the industry should think about moving forward now.
You cannot raise wages in this industry. You have to keep labor costs at a certain level. There is no way to actually create, diversify your front of house. You need the white people in the front to serve the white customers. These have all been myths perpetuated by the restaurant industry, and there hasn't been a real, there's been a fear of change.
I'm Sonia Paul, in for Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Even before the pandemic, the restaurant industry was in crisis. It's one of the largest employers in the U.S., yet, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, pays the lowest wages out of any industry. Its profit margins are slim, and workers who've moved out of San Francisco because of its high costs can still barely afford to work in the industry. Against this context, the restaurant industry has suffered more than any other sector in the pandemic. The National Restaurant Association found that as of December of 2020, more than 110,000 eating and drinking places in the U.S. had closed either temporarily or for good, and 2.5 million restaurant jobs had disappeared. Today, we're discussing the industry's structural inequities that COVID-19 amplified, and whether food support programs launched in the pandemic can scale up to also help push for more systemic change. Saru Jayaraman is a professor at UC Berkeley's Goldman School of Public Policy and directs the university's Food Labor Research Center. She's also the president of One Fair Wage, a national campaign to end subminimum wage in the United States. During the pandemic, she also helped launch a food support program called High Roads Kitchen that similarly employs restaurant workers to feed the hungry. With regard to organizing restaurant workers for better wages, I mean, obviously the pandemic has kind of thrown a wrench into an already hard situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, the focus of our conversation is going to be about this program that emerged in the pandemic called the SF New Deal. But before we go into that, can you help establish a context for the work that you do, the issues that you're involved in, and how understanding that can better help us to understand everything that kind of played out during the pandemic and is continuing to play out?
Yeah. So prior to the pandemic, the restaurant industry was already in crisis. The restaurant industry has been the nation's largest and fastest growing private sector employer, but with the absolute lowest paying wages of any sector and with a long and very horrible history of, you know, structural racism and structural gender inequality and harassment. And it very much stems back to slavery in the United States. At emancipation, the restaurant industry wanted the ability to hire Black people and women and not pay them anything. And so they mutated the notion of tipping in the United States from being an extra or bonus on top of the wage, which is how it first originated in feudal Europe as an extra or bonus on top of the wage, to becoming a replacement for wages. And so because the restaurant industry did not want to pay for the value of Black life, and they did not want to pay, they wanted to pay nothing for women, for the work of women. So, you know, we have to understand that the very roots of this industry's wage structure are related to a desire to not want to pay for the value of Black life and the work of women. And that became law in 1938 as part of the New Deal. Everybody got the right to a minimum wage for the first time, except for millions of Black workers, including tipped restaurant workers, who were told you get a $0 wage as long as tips bring you to the full minimum wage. And we went from zero in 1938 all the way up to $2.13 an hour, which is the current federal minimum wage for tipped workers in the United States. Now, California has rejected that model for the last several decades and requires a full minimum wage with tips on top. But the structural racism and sexism, unfortunately, is still inherent in the California restaurant industry. So that, again, prior to the pandemic, even in California, you saw very severe race inequity. It, actually, San Francisco has is one of the cities with the highest race, weight, gender wage gap between white workers and workers of color of any city in the United States. You see severe sexual harassment and gender discrimination. So these were crises that existed prior to the pandemic. With the pandemic, these crises became exacerbated. Communities of color who were segregated into lower paying restaurants and lower paying positions prior to the pandemic got a lot less in unemployment insurance because they earned less prior to the pandemic. Some of them got nothing. Mm-hmm. And then they were asked to go back to work. They were asked to enforce social distancing and mask rules. And what we've heard from thousands of workers is that sexual harassment, which was already the highest in our industry of any industry prior to the pandemic, became so much worse during the pandemic, with lots of men asking women to take off their masks so they could judge their looks and their tips on that basis. So there were severe structural inequities, race and gender and economic inequity in the restaurant industry prior to the pandemic that got a lot worse, and I would say even life-threatening during the pandemic.
Well, this is vital information. I'm curious about how to understand organizing from a restaurant level as opposed to individual worker level. Like, because from what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the situations you're describing have to do with the wage workers themselves, right? And I'm wondering, like, in the pandemic, we've also seen restaurants as a whole, I mean, often spearheaded by the owner or, you know, head chef, trying to organize and figure out their own survival. Is there anything we should know about what that sort of restaurant organizing has looked like before the pandemic?
Before the pandemic, the National Restaurant Association, which has been around since 1919 and has really fought to keep wages as low as humanly, or I would call them inhumanely possible, was always the primary voice for the restaurant industry, and the California Restaurant Association was its California chapter. During the pandemic, we saw a lot of independent restaurants break off from the Restaurant Association, form their own associations, and we have had our own association of restaurant owners committed to increased wages and equity, race and gender equity, for the last decade, and that association now has close to 900 restaurants around the country that have been fighting for better wages and working conditions in the restaurant sector. So, you know, except for our association, the Restaurant Association has largely been about, employers. It's largely been about supporting employers. Our work has been trying to engage restaurant owners to actually support better wages and working conditions for workers.
Right. I mean, and obviously a restaurant can't function without its workers. It's hard to parcel the two out together, even over the course of reporting this project. I mean, trying to understand how restaurants survive has to do with, like, how can they afford their payroll? Like, what's happening to their workers? You know, many people have had to let go of their workers, and you know, from my understanding, a lot of these people too, you know, they work multiple restaurant jobs in the city, right? And whether or not they're eligible for something like unemployment often depends on their immigration status. As we know, the restaurant industry is also built off of a lot of undocumented workers. So I hear what you're saying. I think what I'm trying to understand is, this is an industry that, as you've noted, has really suffered a lot, that has been, you know, on a precipice, if you will, since before the pandemic. And now in the middle of this pandemic, we've seen a program like the SF New Deal emerge as a way to try to feed the hungry and those who have faced food insecurity for a long time, while also trying to help restaurants and the workers who work at these restaurants stay afloat. And, you know, it's essentially acting as a mediator between restaurants and food service organizations. And I'm wondering, in your experience and in your research, if you've ever seen something like this before, is there a sort of model that this is actually being built off of that we have?
This is not a unique program at all. There are like hundreds of similar programs that came up that have been around before and even during the pandemic. I mean, I started a program just like this that is now, we started with Governor Newsom actually and Secretary of Labor Sue, called High Road Kitchens, that provides cash grants to restaurants that commit to going through our race and gender equity program, so increasing wages and equity for restaurant workers, and commit to providing free meals to the community. And that program started in California, grew to six other states, and now we're in conversations with the Biden administration about making it a federal program. So it's not, and then Jose Andres started his own program. Right. I mean, there are lots of programs like this. It's not unique. I think what we know to be true is that feeding people is definitely a worthy cause. It doesn't actually get to the root causes of these issues. Frankly, low-income people don't want to just be fed. they want to work with dignity. They want to know that when they work full-time, they don't need to go get food for free. They can actually feed their own families with the income that they earn, which is why we're fighting to raise the minimum wage at the federal level, which is why we're fighting to increase race and gender equity, because in California, preventing people of color and immigrants from getting to the top positions is what keeps them in situations where they have to get free meals. Feeding people is only part of the solution. The other bigger part of the solution is changing the structure of the industry, which is why with our program, we tied the feeding program to a commitment by the restaurants to change how they hire, recruit, train, promote, what they pay people, how they compensate people. To us, that has to go hand in hand with feeding people, because feeding people, frankly, is a temporary solution. It really only gets to the symptom, which is hunger. It doesn't get to the root cause, which is the structural inequities in our industry.
Right. And can you remind us, what is the name of the program that you've helped launch that's now being considered as a federal program?
High Road Kitchens. Governor Newsom started it with us in California. Secretary of Labor Julie Sue, who's now becoming federal deputy Secretary of Labor. Other cities, Mayor de Blasio in New York got really excited about the program, replicated it. Mayor Walsh in Boston replicated it. Now he's the Secretary of Labor at the federal level. Mayor Lightfoot, we did it in Chicago with a $1 million grant from an anonymous donor. Governor Whitmer in Michigan replicated it. So it's grown across the country. And the program does support struggling restaurants, and there is a feeding component, but there is this commitment the employers make to go through a program to learn how to pay better wages and desegregate their restaurants racially and gender-wise to increase equity.
Right. And what year did your program start, the High Roads Kitchen?
It was created with the pandemic.
So it was created. Okay.
Yeah. March 2020. Yeah.
I'm speaking with Saru Jayaraman, director of UC Berkeley's Food Labor Research Center. There are so many programs that have emerged as like sort of like pop-up programs. Some people have called them like boutique programs. And what do you think, I mean, obviously, in addition to what you mentioned in terms of educating people about how to tackle the more systemic issues, what do you think could coalesce into making these programs more long-term than sort of like one-off feeling? Especially when it comes to the restaurant aspect, I think just talking to different restaurants who have been going through a pandemic and figuring out how to make their fixed costs, like they're hanging on by a thread. And I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts to helping to ensure their survival as well as helping to feed the hungry?
So I guess I think about it differently. I don't think of feeding the hungry as in any way, a long-term sustainable solution. That is I mean, we should be working to eliminate hunger, and we're getting to a place where people are, again, able to feed themselves through the dignity of work, not trying to sustain programs forever that are about simply feeding people.
Right.
And to me, that also answers the other question as to what's going to make restaurants sustainable. Providing grants to restaurants to feed people for free isn't ultimately going to make them sustainable. What is going to make them sustainable is that people in their communities, in their neighborhoods, can afford to eat out, have the ability to consume and eat out. And ultimately, that requires raising wages and increasing equity. Those are the sustainable long-term solutions, not feeding people. Again, providing grants is temporary. Feeding people is temporary. Raising the ability of Californians to consume, that is the long-term solution. That is where you can provide small businesses during a pandemic with immediate relief. But what is going to allow them to actually last next year and the year after and the year after? It's that what we call Main Street, common people, working people, have the wherewithal and ability to take their family out to eat, have the ability to consume and support restaurants. I mean, it's the Henry Ford model. Henry Ford, who started the Ford Motor Company, always talked about the fact that he needed to pay enough to his workers working the assembly line that they could afford to buy the cars coming off the assembly line. Because if they couldn't, then he lost that market. And that's what's happened to the restaurant industry. They employ the largest workforce in America, but they're the lowest paid workforce. And so they have destroyed the ability of their own huge workforce to consume in their restaurants. By thinking that we're going to be feeding people for free rather than paying them enough so they can feed themselves, so they can pay for their own wages. I mean, you know, you and I work, we get some income for our work, and we go and use it to live. And that's what restaurant workers are asking for. They're asking for the ability to do their work and get the dignity, the value of their work paid for, and then with that, be able to pay for their food and meals and rent, not get free meals. So I don't actually think the right question is how to make these programs last. The right question is how do we solve the structural problems that created the need for these programs in the first place.
So how do we solve these structural problems?
We encourage restaurant owners through both federal and state policy and through incentives programs to help them change their model. Help them pay livable wages, help them increase race and gender equity, which is so ingrained. The inequity is so ingrained. If you walk into most San Francisco restaurants, you see white people serving in a fine dining restaurant and people of color in the kitchen. It is heavily segregated by race. That is not the way it has to be. That was not ordained by God that white people have to be in the front, people of color can be in the back. We are able to train restaurants to change that model so that everybody can have a livable wage. People of color could actually work in the front of the house, can afford to eat out and buy homes and live close to the restaurants. Here's another issue San Francisco was dealing with prior to the pandemic, and it's going to only get worse. There was the worst labor shortage in the history of the city and, frankly, of the country in the restaurant industry prior to the pandemic. Restaurants couldn't find people to work. Why? Because most workers couldn't afford to live anywhere near the restaurants they worked in San Francisco. That is only going to get worse after the pandemic. People have moved, have left the industry, have left San Francisco. Employers are going to have a hard time finding people unless they figure out a way to pay people better and provide opportunities for mobility and advancement. That has got to be our focus, not just feeding people.
In trying to actually generate like long-term sustainable policy change, what are some of the hurdles you've encountered to trying to deliver what seems like a no-brainer solution? And how can we think through these hurdles to actually really, you know, transcend them?
So that's why we created this program with Governor Newsom. I think there has been a way of thinking really perpetuated by the Restaurant Association that you cannot raise wages in this industry. You have to keep labor costs at a certain level. There is no way to actually create, diversify your front of house. You need the white people in the front to serve the white customers. These have all been myths perpetuated by the restaurant industry. And there hasn't been a real, there's been a fear of change. And so what we're able to provide is free training and case studies for how employers can make these changes profitably. And the program we did with Governor Newsom was really about two things. Yes, it was about providing struggling restaurants with grants to go through our program, but it was also about honoring and uplifting the restaurants that did it so that other people could see, oh, we can do that too. We could also increase equity. What happens when you diversify your front of house? What happens when people of color are now working on the dining room floor? I can tell you something that happens. More people of color choose to eat in your restaurant. You are missing a whole beautiful, wonderful, diverse clientele population that would feel more comfortable eating in your restaurant if they saw people like you. I mean, I know I'm Indian American. My husband is African American. We don't feel comfortable going to restaurants where everybody from the clientele to the dining room staff is white. We eat in nicer restaurants where we see people of color. That's where we feel comfortable. And that is true, I can tell you, for a very wide population of people in the Bay Area. And I think restaurants are missing out on a revenue stream. So there are all of these wonderful new way efficiencies and new sources of revenue that restaurants have been missing out on by using a model that they think is the only model. And what we've been trying to do is not only show that there's a different model, but uplift it, honor the restaurants that are choosing to go down that path.
Why do you think it took a pandemic to generate this sort of seismic sort of pivot in thinking?
You know, I think there has been this kind of assumption that this is the way we do things in the industry. This is who works in the front. This is who works in the back. This is what we pay. This is how we do things. And there wasn't the ability, the time. There was a lot of fear, but there just wasn't the capacity to think about changing things. The pandemic kind of opened up the possibilities. The pandemic forced everybody to stop and think, is this really working? Do we want to do things differently? Could we change things? The pandemic created a whole new openness to a different way of doing things that I think is really beautiful and creates a lot of possibility for the future. So stepping into that moment of possibility, we should not limit ourselves to solutions that, again, only address the symptom. We really should step into that moment of possibility by reimagining everything about the industry, the structural history of racism and inequity, and what we can do to make it better for everybody, for the employers, for the workers, and the consumers.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, I know you have to go, but I mean, if you just have any final thoughts about how long will it take, you think, to get to this future, especially now that vaccinations are rolling out and, you know, things are going to go back to quote unquote more normal than the past year?
I think we're going to see some huge structural change at the federal level this year in terms of at least wages. And then I think we have a lot of potential with our Secretary of Labor from California becoming federal Deputy Secretary of Labor. I think there's a lot of potential to rethink this industry. And we are so thrilled to work with amazing restaurant owners in California to make that change happen.
That was Saru Jeyaraman, professor at UC Berkeley, president of One Fair Wage, and co-founder of High Roads Kitchen. I'm Sonia Paul, and you've been listening to Civic.